Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We're back on the road this April with our live show, Cocaine Cowboys. If you want to hear the story of Ireland's love affair with Colombian powder and those who made millions in the gold rush, join us in Killarney's INEC on Saturday the 13th of April.
Tickets for Belfast show have sold out on Ticketmaster.ie, but limited availability remains at ulsterhall.co.uk. That's ulsterhall.co.uk.
The A block itself is where some of members of the Kinnan cartel have been held on different landings. You have Thomas Nicky McConnell, who is awaiting trial in special criminal court for the murder of Gareth Hutch in 2016. We have Daniel Murta, who is serving life for dishing out a savage beating to his partner Nadine Lott, killing her. It is kind of pretty much a brand new block, and it was purposely built, I think, as being, you know, a new high security wing.
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
Businessman Nathan MacDonald, who has been charged in connection with the discovery of 32.8 million euro worth of crystal meth at Cork Port, is being housed on the A4 wing at Portlaoise Jail after being taken off a restricted regime behind bars. Refused bail by the High Court, he's now sharing a wing with notorious neighbours, including a man convicted in connection with the Cian Mulready Woods murder and a notorious Limerick inmate, Red Larry McCarthy. Today, I'm talking to Eamon Dillon about the A4 wing and what sort of prisoners are held there. This is Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. It's a week now since the businessman Nathan MacDonald was refused bail in the High Court, despite an offering from his father to put up a surety of 100,000 of his life savings. He has been held in custody. And what we know is that he's been moved off the restricted regime. He's in Portlaoise prison and he's been moved to, what is it, the A4 wing, is it?
In the high security, Ireland's only high security prison.
Right.
Which is, I think... But they still have soldiers on the roof. That's down to the fact that there's paramilitaries there, I think, in a different part of the jail. And even that, I think they're down to about 10 paramilitaries now. So I'd say the lifetime or the kind of the time for the soldiers being on the roof is coming to an end. I think there was a story recently that it's going to be cut down to quite a small number. It used to be in a full company at one stage.
And I mean, that was obviously in case they landed a helicopter on the roof.
And there was in the 70s, there was, I think, a tipper truck was driven through the front gates and all the rest, and there was all sorts of...
It's a lot of history, Portlaoise prison.
Yeah, it's 150 years old, I think, if not more. So, I mean, it would have been built by the last regime before the...
The
Free State before the Republic of Ireland. So it's been around. I'd say the walls tell stories all right, especially some of the old wing.
Yeah.
The A wing, where we know Mr. MacDonald
is
brand new.
A4. What does this mean? And who's in it with him, or who is he sharing this wing with?
It's interesting, like what we know of some of the people there, I could just go quickly through the names and give you my tuppence worth on it anyway. So you have Thomas Nicky McConnell, who is awaiting trial in the special criminal court for the murder of Gareth Hutch in 2016. We have Daniel Murta, who is serving life for dishing out a savage beating to his partner, Nadine Lott, killing her. You also have Red Larry McCarthy, who was one time head of one of the most dangerous drug gangs in Limerick, who seems to have turned over a new leaf, but still managed to get 8 years for his most recent role in the attempted murder of his rival, Christy Keane. Mm. And then you've Gerard Cruz that we know of as well. And he's serving 7.5 years for his part in the murder of Keane Mulready Woods, which we know was carried out by Robbie Lawler. Mm. But he had a role in that himself. And Paul Crosby got 10 years, and it was Crosby who had lured Woods to the house where he was ultimately killed, drove him to it. So you have these sort of characters. I'm sure there's others as well that we know of.
There are a collection of individuals who have been at all levels of the criminal underworld. There's actually is another guy called Darren Caffrey, who I believe is a man with 230 previous convictions, and he's in there for possession of drugs for sale or supply. He pleaded guilty to that. So he, you know, is another sort of member, I suppose, of the criminal fraternity that's well used to the regimes of prisons. I mean, 230 previous convictions, you'd want to have been in and out of jail a few times with those.
I imagine you'd know the ropes fairly well at this stage. But I think what they are basically, essentially, people with serious connections one way or another, whether it's from being at the bottom or at the top, but that they're more or less unaligned. Mm. So they're kind of, potentially, some of them are too dangerous or too much of a target to be allowed to stay in a more regular prison setting. Mm. So, I mean, the A block itself is where some of, you know, there's other, you know, members of the Kinnan cartel have been held on different landings. It is kind of pretty much a brand new block, and it was purposely built, I think, as being, you know, a new high security wing. And that's what I think these guys are. So, like, you kind of, when you look at Daniel Murta, like, he's serving life for killing Nadine Lott, but he hasn't had a quiet time in prison. He's been involved in, you know, various violent incidents. He himself was the victim of an attack in Mountjoy. His face was slashed open, and he was moved to the Midlands prison. Then he was moved again to the high security. But one of his links, he's a pal of Gary Thompson from Finglas. Like, he's one of two brothers that are serving time for the attempted murder of Patsy Hutch. Mm. So you have someone like Daniel Murta, you say, okay, it's a domestic murder, yet he's friendly with, you know, a serious gangland figure as well. So, you know, they're kind of slightly unusual prisoners in that sense.
Is right. Do you recall exactly what happened or what he did to Nadine Lott?
Oh, look, it's one of these, well, when I say one of these, it's a horrific case. Like, you know, it's become a bit of a touchstone for anti-violence campaigners. You know, people are trying to highlight the issue of domestic violence and whether or not, you know, men like him, whether, you know, their record should follow them around a bit more publicly, so that women who get involved with people like him are more, you know, will have a bit of forewarning. Murta, he's serving life for killing his 30-year-old girlfriend, Nadine. And that happened in 2019 and in her house in Arklow. She was left barely recognizable. I remember our colleague Pat O'Connell was on the story at the time on a Saturday. I was on the news desk, yeah. And the story coming through when we started hearing the details it was genuinely shocking. Like, you know, he was very much on a drugs bender, and she was doing her best to get away from him at this stage.
Did he beat her?
And there was an eyewitness talked about him making growling noises and like he carried on attacking her. He was never going to get away with a murder. It was, you know, it was just a crazy, really extreme violence was used on her.
And a trained boxer, this guy is.
Yeah, he was just totally out of control. I mean, there's one witness said he was basically going ape on her. A guard had phoned an ambulance control, informed him that she'd been beaten to a pulp. I mean, she was just like, it was grotesque what had happened. I mean, she was missing teeth. A paramedic who said when he went in, he said it would haunt him for the rest of the life what he saw, and it was one of the most horrendous scenes he'd ever walked into. Another one said it was like a bulldozer had gone through her apartment and he was trying to perform CPR on her. So she suffered traumatic head. This is stuff then that came out in court. She suffered traumatic head, neck, and chest injuries. Her brain was swollen following the sustained and violent attack. And the pathologist noticed that the blunt force injuries were caused by hands, feet, and fists, but that the use of a blunt weapon could not be ruled out. So obviously his training as a boxer meant that he was able to hit probably harder and more viciously than your average Joe would have.
And they couldn't work out whether, such was the force of it, whether the blunt weapon was a fist or was an actual item.
Yeah, and that, yeah, and I mean, I think even at the time, I think like we were getting the early reports that she'd been stabbed, that there was so much blood,
God,
which she wasn't. Yeah. I mean, she's 64 different injuries, but she was just essentially, you know, beaten to death by a guy who was just, you know, on a complete cocktail of
and who
drugs.
She was trying to move away from. She'd identified that she wanted to be living independently of him, having had a relationship with her. I think there was text messages read out during the trial where she's sort of saying to him, you know, it's over, basically. Move on. And she was trying to be as clear as she could with him, but obviously he wasn't taking the message. Of course, you know, people working in around the campaigns against domestic violence would suggest that trying to leave a partner who is violent is the most dangerous time for a woman. And obviously that proved it.
Yeah. I mean, that's, we heard that recently with the obituaries that we were doing on Pierce McCauley, which is when he launched the attack on his wife, whenever that was, a good few, back in 2014, was it, I think, at this stage, or 2016, something like that. Actually, not too long before this. But I mean, yeah, that was it. Yeah, it was like...
So he's obviously, Murtagh is somebody who has continued with that sort of volatile attitude, perhaps, in prison. He was himself knifed in the face. That was in Mountjoy, having got into a row with somebody.
Yeah, there was this kind of story that we did previously where he was attacked and he was moved. And it was a suggestion that it was over, let's say, the control of illegal drugs in the prison. Now, it wasn't clear whether he was stopping somebody taking control or whether he was the person trying to get in control. And it was two relatively kind of low-level characters that were behind the attack, or certainly carried it out. And that his pal Gary Thompson, despite his own sort of hardcore gangland background, was also attacked and I think beaten up in the same attack. And they would have been moved as a result. I think Thompson himself hasn't, you know, been quietly doing his time. He's been one of those figures that's ended up being moved around. He's been in Castlereagh and the Midlands as well. Mm. It's often just this, I suppose, to stop these guys setting up a network in a prison to disrupt, you know, their continued attempts to stay involved in gangland crime. And that's what that's about. So, I mean...
Now, Keith Deegan, who's also in that wing, is an equally volatile, violent individual. He was an armed post office raider. And he armed himself with a tow bar, which he wrapped in a towel before he and two others entered a shop in Kilbarrick in North Dublin and smashed a glass screen separating the staff from customers in order to get access to the cash. He left witnesses and people in it absolutely terrified. Two female staff officers were screaming and crawled across the broken glass in order to get away from him and others involved in that that post office raid. But Gerard Cruz, who, you know, is in jail in relation to his role in the Keane Mulready Woods murder, and obviously that child, that 17-year-old, was dismembered and his body parts were left around parts of Dublin. The murder was carried out by Robbie Lawler. Gerard Cruz was an individual who, Gerard Jed Cruz, they called him, who had, I think he pleaded guilty to his role in the murder, but he had brought Keane Mulready Woods and another individual, Paul Crosby, to meet with Robbie Lawler at the back of a house in Drogheda that night. He was kind of one of the last to see him alive.
Yeah, Crosby and Cruz were both, they were more or less tried together for their part, you know, aiding, you know, someone else to carry out a serious crime. And, you know, what had happened was that they'd been involved in sourcing a van that was used. Paul Crosby and Cruz, Crosby was involved in or made direct contact with Keane Mulready Woods and brought him to the house where ultimately they believe he was killed. And then Cruz was suspected then as well. Well, he wasn't suspected, he was later convicted of being involved in the aftermath in which, you know, there was body parts of Keane Mulready Woods found in various places, including North Dublin and later on some wasteland in Drogheda. And there was, you know, DNA was found on carrier bags that Cruz had carried So, you know, it was that kind of, I mean, he doesn't have a huge amount of, no, his previous to that was 2012. He was a good bit older.
Yeah.
But certainly.
He was quite apologetic, I think, as well, during his, or previous to his sentencing. He actually and Paul Crosby were sort of, their trial was going, and then they both pleaded guilty to, I think Paul Crosby had initially been charged with murder, and that was dropped to a lesser offence, and they both pleaded guilty to it. And their sentence hearing was smack bang in the middle of the Regency Hotel trial of Jerry the Monk Hutch, because it was an absolutely crowded courtroom, huge amount of journalists there, and the next thing up pops the sentence hearing. You know, at the beginning of court, sometimes they'll attend to other business. But he, as far as I can recall, did offer his sympathies, and he was certainly remorseful, I'd say, for his role in that crime. And he doesn't seem to have had a huge amount of history in organised crime, unlike Red Larry McCarthy, because, like, he's a very familiar face in the prison system.
Yeah, I mean, Red Larry, as we've talked about him a number of times on this, and, you know, I mean, he was one time regarded as the head of the McCarthy-Dundon gang and spent 10 years, he managed to miss most of the, I suppose, the worst of the feud, doing a 10-year sentence in the UK for arms possession. And when he got out, you know, was very much trying to get back into the swing of things, but by the looks of it. But he was convicted now of a relatively minor role in the attempt to kill Christy Keane, who was shot four times and managed to survive outside. He was turning up for his early morning workout at the University of Limerick. And McCarthy was, there was a number of people done for, you know, using a car, and again, he was a similar charge with him. It was making a car available for the people who actually carried out the shooting. Now, you know, but you know, during his time in prison, like he again didn't do his time quietly. He was involved in, you know, dirty protests, covering himself in excrement, blocking his sink, this kind of thing. He found himself very much isolated, that the other Limerick gangsters weren't particularly interested in backing him up anymore. So kind of attempts, I remember we did one story where he was trying to kind of, you know, impose his position in the Midlands to sort of control whatever trade and illegal drugs there, and it kind of pretty much fell flat. And when he came out then, that was a sentence he got for, I think, beating up a guy over somebody looking for a compensation for a motorbike crash. And he ended up attacking this man. And he was serving time for that at that stage. And he came out then, he went back in. He was in custody while awaiting trial for his part in the Christy Keane attempted murder. And again, wasn't particularly well behaved, was involved in, you know, similar kind of incidents. And eventually then he did get bail and ended up in the northwest of the country, where by all accounts he has turned over a new leaf. And I think you were saying before as well, like, you know, there's immediate members of his family now who've gone on to third level education and really do look like they've managed to escape break the cycle and move out of, I suppose, that milieu. But like, yeah, the fact that he's on that wing would suggest that he's got nothing to do with these old cronies, and that, you know, it sounds like it's very much a protection wing as well, as much as anything.
You talk about they put prisoners together in order for them to not relate, basically, in prison. They don't want them coming together in prison, certainly convicted criminals and those involved in gangland activity, coming together as a gang as such. So there's a kind of a mishmash of personalities and people, and presumably, you know, they will move if that doesn't work out, if that sort of grouping doesn't work out. Like, do they mix a lot, do you know, when they're on the wings?
In some wings they would do, yeah. They'd have plenty of time to spend together. In other wings, such as this one, I suspect that there isn't as much free time together. Mm. That, you know, that's quite possible they'd be taking their meals separately, that they wouldn't necessarily be you know, hanging out together, playing pool together, watching TV together. There might be a number of them might be allowed. But, you know, again, that would be probably carefully vetted.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them, you know, I mean, don't forget, like, we've a couple of people here are on remand who haven't been convicted yet. So there's a different dynamic at play, because the prison authorities have to make sure that there's no attempts, for instance, to interfere with an upcoming trial.
Yeah.
Which is why, obviously, you know, phones are restricted in prison and stuff like that. And you don't
want... obviously, a prisoner who has an upcoming trial or who has upcoming business before the court, shall we say, would be preoccupied with that I'm sure they spend a lot of their time reading up on their case and, you know, meeting with their solicitors and putting together their defence.
Yeah, and in the old days, or not the old days, not that long ago, like they would have been able to keep their legal papers in their cell and would have been able to go through them. So, I mean, a book of evidence, unless it's redacted, is going to have a lot of names and addresses mm-hmm. and so on. Whereas nowadays, that is, it's far more stricted. They have to, you know, look at these in a particular office. It's, you know, it's at the governor's pleasure, so to speak. But they wouldn't have access to them day and night the way they would have at one point. I mean, just to go back on a completely different topic about access to criminal files, was that it used to be what some of the child rapists used to swap in prison and get a kick out of it so they could read their each other's victim statements. Stop. And so I think that was one of the reasons to stop allowing them, you know, full access to their legal files. And you can make the argument that, you know, everybody deserves a chance, like to to be studying their legal files and try and put forward the best defense. And you know, they might have a little bit more time on their hands than some of their lawyers, and might actually come up with something useful. But it is restricted now. So I mean, and obviously, I mean, even going back, the likes of Rossi Walsh and his famous reputation as being a jailhouse lawyer, and you know, various people would have tried different legal stunts over the year. What's his name? Your man Desmond, who's dead now. Like, I mean,
Mark Desmond.
Yeah, he was very much tried to defend himself, and I think he successfully did it over a gun in a shed. And you know, and
you'd have plenty of time.
And I remember being, I remember being at that. And there was one little niche. It's a little gem that was passed around in the prison at the time. That if you're a defendant. If a defendant is defending himself, the state prosecution at the time aren't allowed to do a final statement to the jury. And he piped up, and lo and behold, the jury didn't get a final statement. Right. But which is always the great way for, you know, the prosecution to drive the nail in.
Yes, so, and to recall, because of course they're first to go, the prosecution, with their case, and then the defence comes second. So the reminder and that sort of, I suppose, concising all those days of evidence, because a jury can get bored if a trial goes
and putting it all together in a nice narrative, a nice, you know, in bite size, easy explained, this is why he's guilty, you know, and well, the way lawyers do it, but that's what's supposed to happen.
I know. If you're a journalist, I mean, the days to go to court, if you don't have the time to go every day, is the opening statements and the closing, because you pretty much get everything that has gone on in the meantime. Now, Nathan MacDonnell, who is charged in connection with the discovery of €32 million worth of crystal meth at Cork Port, is facing trial, and he's before the district court at the moment, so we can't discuss details of that case, but he has applied and been refused bail. He would be in a position that he can appeal that decision, of course, and no doubt his lawyers, you know, will try again for bail. It was on March 28th that bail application was rejected. But in the meantime, he has formally cut all ties with his businesses, his business empire in Munster. And documents have shown that he's officially resigned his position as a director with Smashburgers. And he officially resigned on March 8th. And that those documents have actually been filed with the company registrations office. So his wife, Jackie O'Duffy MacDonald, has been appointed as the company director. Ballyseedy Garden Centre outside Tralee, where there was searches conducted, I don't think it has reopened for business.
No, I know our colleague Pat did a story about it. And I think it was earlier this month, wasn't it? The company informed staff and suppliers it was going to cease trading, and basically the business had been transferred to Smashburgers, which Mr. MacDonnell has now resigned from.
Nothing
to do from it. And that but the debts to suppliers wouldn't be carried out. So, I mean, basically the company's gone bust.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that for the moment, and we'll see if he appeals that bail, refusal of bail decision. Thank you.
Thanks, Nicola.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. Produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Claude Amini. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review. Or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.